and this is the Convict Australia podcast. Thank you for tuning in.
Hi everyone, I would just like to start by acknowledging the Dharawal speaking people who are the traditional custodians of this land, and I pay my respects to elders both past, present and future. Today I have Solomon Staunton with me, who is going to tell us about the life of a convict named John Matthew Richardson. Welcome, Solomon.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's great to be here.
So can you tell us a bit about John's background, like where he was born, where he was raised? Do you know much about his life before he was convicted?
Yeah, so his early life is a lot more obscure than later on, but we do know that he was born in 1797 in a little town called Slinford in West Sussex in England. That was close by to a bigger town called Horsham that people might know more about. But yeah, he was one of five siblings of William and Sarah Richardson.
What was the crime he committed?
So from newspaper records, we've found that in 1815, could be early 1816, he was found guilty of basically stealing 9 bottles of gin.
Oh.
And yeah, which is quite interesting. And
how old was he?
He was probably about 18 or 19 at that point. Yeah.
Okay. And
there is evidence to suggest that he was part of a group which carried out this.
Group
he
of
wasn't
boys.
Alone. Yeah.
Yep.
And I think he probably wanted to sell it on after he'd stolen it.
Yeah. Did he have a job before he was convicted?
Yeah. So by the time he was finally sent out, he was known as a gardener and he had skills in that field. So it's probably not a stretch to say that he worked in a number of nurseries before he was sent out, probably in nearby Horsham. At that time, there were quite a few quite successful nurseries. So he probably worked in those as working underneath other people who had more experience than him, probably.
Yeah. So he stole bottles of gin. What did he get for that?
So he got 7 years for larceny, and that was pretty usual of that kind of crime. I mean, it's hard to tell exactly what you're going to get, what crime, what punishment, but I think 7 years was pretty usual for something like that.
Yeah, I think 7 years, 14 years and life were the most common sentences at the time, if you weren't hanged, that is. So do you know what ship he came out on?
After he'd been sentenced, he spent quite a lot of time in jail. I think it was nearly a year before he was put on a ship. He was on the Lord Eldon, which left in early 1817. This ship was quite an interesting one because it had John MacArthur and I think it was two of his sons were also returning to Australia.
Right.
Yeah, after MacArthur had been involved in the Rum Rebellion, he had to go back to England to basically face the music, as they say. Mm. And I think it was just at that point that he'd been given permission to return. So he was on board as well.
So when he arrived in Sydney, what sort of occupation did he get?
So we don't know if he did gardening work and nursery work when he first arrived. It's probably likely because that's what his trade was when he arrived.
I would imagine he would have been highly sought after with
exactly.
All the problems of growing crops in the colony.
Yeah,
I think he would have been snapped up straight away.
So we think that pretty much immediately he was put into the botanic gardens that had been just, I think it was 1816 that they were opened. So it was almost immediately after that he started working there.
Right. And what sort of things was he doing there? Do we have any sort of detail about any of the plants he was looking after or what was his role?
Yeah, so early on, I'm not sure if people know, early on with the gardens, it was a very private place, so only certain people were allowed entry. And it was also a very important place because a lot of vegetables and other things were grown there for the government and other important industries. So John probably would have been involved with growing vegetables, that kind of work, as well as tending to the early plants that were introduced. I think in, it was 1818, there was a Norfolk Island pine that was planted in the gardens. I think it had, I think there's evidence to say that it was, they had multiple plantings. So I think it was first planted in something like 1816, almost like right after the gardens were opened, but it had been washed out a number of times. So by 1818, I think it was like the third time it was being planted. And we know that John planted it this third and final time. We know this because he wrote a letter much later in his life where he said, "Oh, I planted that tree in 1818 when I was working there." And it was quite interesting because Elizabeth Macquarie actually handed him the tree to plant in the ground. Yeah, and that grew into a absolutely enormous tree. It was called the Wishing Tree, and it became quite a folk legend in Sydney, and everyone would go and visit the Wishing Tree, make a wish.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's nice.
Yeah.
So how long was he in that role?
So he arrived in, it was September of 1817, and probably was working from then until about 1821. But I should say that in early 1820, he was sent to New Zealand by Lachlan Macquarie because Lachlan wanted him to collect certain plant specimens and other natural history items and bring them back to the Botanic Gardens. So, in 1820, that's where he spent his time.
He sounds like he was very lucky considering. Like he obviously had a passion for this and, to get assigned to this and be able to travel. I don't know, traveling wasn't great back then, but it beat doing hard labor in Sydney, I'm sure.
Yeah, and his skill, I mean, I feel like he would have had to be skillful because his character wasn't always great. He wasn't always a good boy. And I think, he must have had some skill for people to keep on utilizing him in these roles.
So did he have a ticket of leave at this point, or was he just, doing his 7 years?
Yeah, so it was still his 7 years.
Right.
I'm not sure if he was given the promise that he'd get his freedom if he went to New Zealand or what was happening. But, it was still in that seven-year period. Yeah.
So what happened when he came back from New Zealand?
So pretty much immediately after he returned, I think it was late 1820, by February of 1821, he'd been given an absolute pardon by Macquarie. And
pretty rare.
It is. He didn't serve very long.
So I take it he wasn't reoffending. Like you said, he was a bit of a naughty boy. He wasn't reoffending enough to be getting further sentencing.
So basically on his first time as a convict, he was sent twice.
First time.
So on the first time he seemed to be quite well behaved, which was he got his freedom pretty quickly. And we know that he probably did a good job because there's a letter from 1821 from Macquarie to Lord Bathurst, who was, I think, the secretary to the colonies, or he was in charge of that. And in this letter, Macquarie said, "I'm sending John Richardson back to England with a whole lot of plants and other natural history items for these really illustrious people in Europe." So I think there was the King of England, Lord Bathurst. I think there was Prince Leopold, the Emperor of Austria. Quite a few really, really well-known people. John was in charge of these plants.
Gosh, no pressure to keep them alive, imagine.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think it was also significant because the ship that he got on to go back to England was the Dromedary, which is quite a significant ship because it carried Macquarie to the colony back in 1809. But in 1821, it was Thomas Scott and John Big had just completed their inquiry into how things were run in the colony. And they returned on the Dromedary as well at that time.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah, they're quite interesting.
So he's back in England, back at home. Has he turned his life around?
No, sadly. So what happened was, I think it was within the year of getting back, he'd offloaded all those plants. We're not sure how he did that. He probably was met when he stepped off the ship and had to give them all up. I imagine he wasn't the one taking them to these people.
Oh, that's a shame. Do you know what the plants were?
I don't really know. I think there may be a list, but there'd been several expeditions by the colonial botanist Charles Fraser, as well as Alan Cunningham, who was the king's botanist, and a few other people who'd gone on expeditions around and collected material and brought them back to the gardens in Sydney. Mm. So I imagine that quite a few of those were the plants.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, so he got back to England and he probably had to give these back. And then it was at this time, we believe, he began a working relationship with a nursery called Mr. Colville's Nursery. And this nursery was, they dealt in rare and exotic plants. So for the next number of years, John actually had a connection with them. He sent plants to them and they grew them and illustrated them, and wrote about them. Yeah, so that's where we think he started that relationship. Yeah, but like you were saying, within a year, he reoffended, sadly.
And what did he do this time?
Yeah, so he robbed a house this time.
Ooh.
Yeah, and because it was his second offence and because robbing a house was quite a serious crime, it wasn't just basic theft.
Yeah.
He was sentenced to death.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what saved him?
We're not quite sure. I imagine it's probably his previous experience in the colony and his skills as a gardener and as a botanist.
He probably had some good references to back him up.
Imagine so. Yeah. So that was transportation to life. It was moved to. He was given that instead.
So when did he come out for the second time?
So he spent quite a while. I think it was late 1821 to early 1822. He spent on a prison hulk called the Leviathan. Yeah. And then I think it was mid 1822, he was finally sent on the Arab, and that was that went to Hobart, Van Diemen's Land.
So what happened to him there?
He was immediately after arriving, he was assigned to an emancipist. His name was William Jemmett, and John was his gardener in Hobart Town. Yeah.
Oh, so he got another gardening job. That's good.
Yeah.
Very lucky.
Yeah, he is. Unfortunately, in that time he was there, he was involved in a couple more thefts. Seems to be a bit of a trend for this guy now. Mm. So I think he stole a cap from one gentleman and a waistcoat from another. Yeah, and within like a few days, he was also found to have stolen 9 pounds of turnip seed from his master, William Jemmett.
Okay. Yes.
Strangely, it seems he was acquitted of all those crimes. So that was lucky.
Not even a flogging.
It doesn't seem so.
Right.
Yeah, that was very unusual.
So how long did he stay with that master?
I think, yeah, so it was in early 1823 that the governor of Van Diemen's Land, Mr. Sorrell, I think he received a letter from the governor of New South Wales, basically saying, can John accompany the colonial botanist, Charles Fraser, who was currently in Van Diemen's Land, whether he could accompany him back to Sydney to the Botanic Gardens. Yeah, and that's what happened. Sorrell allowed that.
So he's back in Sydney at his old job. Did he ever marry?
Yeah, so when he got back to Sydney, he was given an overseer position in the gardens. So he was in charge of probably several people. And in late 1823, he was sent, we think he was sent by Fraser to Western Australia to collect plants. So this is another example of him being given these opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it just goes to show you, doesn't it? If you had a useful skill, you could really go far.
Yeah, exactly. So he went with this man called William Baxter, who was a plant collector. He'd collect plants and bring them back to England to sell. So he was like a private collector. And yeah, I think it was in June of 1824 or a bit earlier, he got back to Sydney. I think that was when he married his wife, Jane Nelson.
Yeah. And they had children?
Yeah. So I think it was about a year after they were married, they had a little boy. John had quite a number of children before, long story short, he remarried later in life, and I'm descended from one of those children. So,
oh, right.
Yeah. So after marrying Jane, I think it was maybe just, can't exactly remember the date, but in 1824, John had also gone to Queensland on an expedition with the Surveyor General, Oxley.
So he's still based in Sydney. Is this where Jane and his child was?
Yeah, right. So okay. I think Jane had arrived in 1816 as a convict as well. I think she was sentenced for theft as well. Yeah, so there was a small family while John had to still do all these activities and go on all these expeditions. Yeah.
Hmm. So how did it come to pass that he's gone from one wife to the next wife? Was there a tragedy or?
Yeah. So as I was saying, in 1824, he'd gone to Queensland with Oxley to do some exploring around the Brisbane River and those areas. But upon his return to Sydney, I think it was in early 1825, John was actually sent to Northern Australia to a site called Fort Dundas on Melville Island, which I think had been set up about a year prior. And it was this settlement, I think they started it because they wanted trade with kind of Southeast Asia. They wanted Malays to come and visit, and they wanted it to be like a staging post so they could control all of Australia, because at this point, there was the Dutch up in Timor in that area, and they wanted to be able to control all of Australia. So they set up this settlement. And
so we're talking about a pretty small island right at the north, northern tip of Australia.
Yeah. And it was pretty much a disaster. Yeah, they had monsoons and things were awful. The local indigenous population, the Tiwi, were also very steadfast in protecting their home from any invading forces. They didn't like the Europeans there at all. So they were very, they were protecting what was theirs. And
so there was a lot of conflict between.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And no one came to trade, and no one really utilized the settlement. So I think it was like 4 years that this place was settled for. But in that time, nothing really happened, right? The British didn't get that foothold, and their expectations weren't realized.
Yeah. So what happened? Did they just give up on the idea and abandoned the island, or?
So John, Jane and their son went up there in late 1825, and they set themselves up there. John was given the position as head gardener. So his role was to plant vegetables and other things to combat scurvy and other diseases caused by a lack of certain dietary things like that.
Yeah, I think vitamin C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in 1826 he was sent to Timor to collect more plants, and this expedition to Timor was also to collect water buffalo, because the cows that they'd brought did not do well in that climate. They brought back a whole lot of buffalo that did a lot better, but as you probably know, that set off a cascading event where they just flooded into the northern part of Australia. And even today, they cause huge amounts of damage to the natural environment. And that was where it began in 1826, when they brought, like, I think it was 10 buffalo back from Timor. And Jane had another child on this island. As you can imagine, the conditions were pretty awful for someone who had to give birth. And
I wouldn't have wanted to do it back then, that's for sure.
Yeah. She gave birth to a daughter, Elizabeth Melville Richardson, named after the island that they were on. And she was actually the first European baby born in Northern Australia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was quite significant. But unfortunately, John, he didn't follow the rules. And he was found to have bought some alcohol from a ship that had just stopped at Melville Island, and he basically sold it to all the soldiers and families throughout the settlement. And there's a letter that says everybody was drunk, and it was just, it was a disaster, right? And the commandant,
party for them, but
that's right.
Yeah.
And the commandant found out, and unusually, he didn't punish John. What he did was, Jane wanted to go back to Sydney because she was probably done with it and needed to have a little better environment, right?
Yeah.
And so John did this, and the commandant took away that privilege. So he punished him by punishing her, which is very
unusual.
Happy wife,
happy life. You know what they say.
Awful, isn't it? It's just...
Yeah.
And it's really unusual that a convict is... given so much liberty like that, like, they usually would be the one punished. But I guess because of his skills, he was like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Mm.
So yeah, they needed him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, eventually they did leave the island.
They did.
Altogether, I take it.
Hmm. Yep.
And what, they headed back to Sydney?
Mm. Yeah. So at this time, there'd been another settlement formed in nearby Raffles Bay. So it was just a little bit east of Melville Island. And that also didn't really work out like the British intended. So it was like in 1829, everyone packed up and they just left. It was just, they just couldn't do it anymore. So they sailed around the western side of Australia to Western Australia, which had recently been settled by the British. And I think they stopped off in King George Sound and that area. So John had already been there back in 1824.
Yeah.
And we think that he was also accompanied by Baxter, who was there at the time as well. And they did some more collecting. And finally, after they'd been there for a little while, they finally sailed back to Sydney.
And how was his life after that? Did he ever get a ticket of leave and a pardon again?
Mm. So, unfortunately, Jane died soon after they arrived back in Sydney. She'd given birth to another boy soon after arriving back in Sydney, and it must have just been too much. Spending that time up in Northern Australia, it just probably wasn't good for her at all.
Well, perhaps that's why she wanted to leave, because she was... ill
sick, yeah. And it was quite sad, because John would have been given a pardon, but because of all that stuff with the alcohol, that was taken away. So he only got a ticket of leave when he got back to Sydney. So he could work in that area, but he wasn't free by any means. And also, which was really sad, was his children were taken away and put in orphanages because he couldn't look after them as a convict.
Course. Yeah.
So that basically set up quite a few years where things did not go very very well for him at all. Yeah.
And sadly, that was quite common.
Yeah.
Children being taken away and yeah.
I should mention, though, he was assigned to a settler in Tempe on that river there. And, yeah, he wrote a number of letters over the years while he was serving this person, basically asking that his children be returned to him. He was an overseer with this person, and he was in charge of a number of people, and he probably thought that he could look after his children. But the government didn't seem to think so, and they were never returned to him. Yeah. So
that's really sad.
And it all culminated in I think it was 1834. He'd basically caused a ruckus at this settler's house with his workers, so much so that he said John should not be in charge of anything and should not be in Sydney, and he should just be long gone, right? He shouldn't be anywhere near this place. He was sent to work on a road gang. I think it was breaking rock in chains. So this was like the first time he was given hard labor.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think he was working out near Berrima on the Great South Road.
And how long did that last for?
I think it was probably about 2 years.
Mm.
Yeah. Because there's a newspaper report which says that he was a runaway from this iron gang in 1834. Yep. And I don't know. I think he got 50 lashes for absconding, which would have been pretty awful. And nothing really more is known. He seems to do that until finally in 1836, he is given the opportunity to join the Surveyor General Major Mitchell's expedition. And that's when his life turns around again.
And what do they do on that expedition?
So I think this was, I think it was Mitchell's third expedition at this point. His job was to follow the Darling River to where it met the Murray River. And I think then he had to kind of circle back to Yass, so west of Goulburn. And it was just to basically figure out how those rivers intersected and how they behaved, basically.
Gosh, he's had some interesting assignments, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And John's job on this was as his official botanical collector.
Can you name some of the things that he collected? Do you know?
Well, in this expedition, John Lindley, who's a famous botanist back in England, he described a lot of the material that was collected on this expedition. And I think he said that something like 68 species were new to science, so had never been seen before. And
amazing.
And you can imagine John would have had a huge role in collecting that. Mitchell was an amateur botanist and liked that stuff as well. So I would say that he probably collected some as well. But they would have been working in tandem, right? They would have been working on things together, collecting together. And as individual plants, I think there were quite a few wildflowers native to the Grampians, which they passed through. Quite a few of those John collected, as well as the Grampians gum, a eucalypt, which hadn't been seen before, as well as, quite a few other different things. After this expedition, which lasted nearly a year, he was finally given a conditional pardon by Mitchell. Unfortunately, very annoying for me, because I like to know each part of his life, but for the next, until probably about 1837 until the early 1850s, we know almost nothing about what he was doing. Which is really unusual.
I know, it's very frustrating, but most of the time I think it means they led a happy, quiet life.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you think about your own life, you're only in the newspaper if you do something really amazing or really bad. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I imagine he probably collected and worked with plants in that time. Basically, yeah, he would have done that. And then finally in 1852, we find him in Singleton and working on a place called Redbourne Berry Estate, which was property owned by Howe, the famous explorer of that region. And he was working there as a gardener. In that year, he married his second wife, Catherine Doyle. Yeah, and they probably settled down in that general area and had several children in that time.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for coming on the show and sharing that all with us. It was sounds like he had an amazing life, a very lucky convict.
Yes. One of the biggest things that I found was how remarkable it is that he continues to do things that would warrant punishment and warrant like severe punishment, but that he's given more opportunity afterwards.
Yeah.
It's something that I find quite amazing. I mean, the only thing I can think of was he was so useful that they couldn't punish him that way.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
He must be so proud too of all the work he achieved, and you're so lucky to be able to trace him as much as you have. I know you're frustrated with the gaps, but for most of us, we don't have that kind of record available to us. So
yeah, I enjoy learning about how people of that time lived and what they thought. And he was by no means a saint at all. He had his faults. Yep. But that's what I find interesting, so interesting about people like that, is you can't just look at them one way. You know, they are they're a whole lot of contradictions, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And that's what I find that's most interesting about those people.
Mm. Oh, well, thank you again. And I hope to see you on the show again sometime. Let us know if you're researching any other characters.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you for listening to the Convict Australia podcast. If you'd like to show your appreciation and get more involved, there are a number of ways you can. The first is by signing up to Convict Australia on Patreon, and you will get some perks like the Convict Australia newsletter. Secondly, leave a review and tell your friends and family. This really does make a huge difference. And lastly, join the Facebook and Instagram group Convict Australia. All the links I've mentioned will be in the show notes. Thank you again. Till next time.